Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. There's more at the website, allbook-books.com. So this will give an example of how just a couple of paragraphs gets me lit with the literature, but saves me from literature in a sense, because you can read books and books and books and books, but sometimes it's all quite very simple. And sometimes it takes sifting through the books and books and books and articles to find the simple. But that's why I wanted to highlight this. One of my favorite journalists, Pepe Escobar, his recent article, All Quiet, (Panic), on the Western Front, he's talking about the Davos meeting, which is, if you don't know, that's like where all the heads of state and big corporations and tech honchos and bigwigs and what he calls the masters of the universe get together and they plan, they make plans. Point is, it's the idea behind it is that these big honchos all get together and plan the course, what they think is most important for humanity and the world. And here's the quote from the recent one. In parallel, very few people are aware that on June 13th, 2019, in New York, a secret deal was clinched between the UN, the WEF, World Economic Forum, an array of oligarch-weaponized NGOs with the WHO, World Health Organization, in the front line, and last but not least, the world's top corporations, which are all owned by an interlinked maze with Vanguard and BlackRock at the center. Vanguard and BlackRock are like these financial institutions that literally have investments in their hands in like virtually everything. That's why he's saying which are all owned by Interlink. The practical result of the deal is the UN Agenda 2030. Virtually every government in the NATO stan area and the Western Hemisphere, U.S. establishment definition, has been hijacked by Agenda 2030. You can look that one up, which translates essentially as hoarding, privatizing, and financializing all the Earth's assets under the pretext of protecting them. Translation, the marketization and monetization of the entire natural world. And then he has several links to back that up. So that is the key thing right there. And why I'm highlighting this is because that is essentially the quote game, the nasty game that is going on in the world. Whether when you look at all the greenwashing and all the push for electronic vehicles and batteries and virtually everything, and the original and indigenous peoples defending literally on the front lines, defending land, air, and water, uprisings in various countries, farmers in India protesting, trying to stop the mine and the Lithium Americas mine in Nevada at Thacker Pass. All of this connects to the same essence of the attempts by the powers that bank as hoarding, privatizing, and financializing all the Earth's assets under the pretext of, quote, protecting, unquote, them. The marketization and monetization of the entire natural world is what they are going for. And here's another quote from a book, The Red Deal. As the Red Nation declared in The Red Deal, it is the philosophy of money. Sounds like an oxymoron. Philosophy of money that drives contemporary society, and its primary method of relationality is destruction. There is another word for a money-driven system that expresses its existence through destruction. Capitalism. Capitalism destroys life. It pollutes the rivers, it scars mountains, it starves moose, wolves, and salmon. It alienates our bonds with each other and with the earth. Its very existence demands our disappearance. The only response to such a destructive system raised to a planetary level is a universal struggle for nature and humanity, demanding a people's sovereignty of the earth and of production. The global ecological revolution still to come means returning to our humanity and our origins as good relatives of the earth. It means rationally regulating the metabolism of human society with the universal nature of which we are inextricably a part. So our very essence, our very identity, our consciousness, whatever you want to call it, is interconnected with the earth and all the beings. So The attempt to destroy that is an attempt to destroy ourselves. Thus, can accurately call it insane. And then you can label whatever, you know, monetary, capitalistic, all those labels that go on it. But that's underlying it is just, it's suicidally insane. And then another quote in another article, a key basis for resistance to natural capital colonialism is agroecology, presented as a more rational ecological alternative. La Via Campesina initiated its global campaign for agrarian reform in 1999. The Landless Workers Movement, MST, in Brazil has also played a leading role in fighting against the capitalization of nature. That's why it's at least some, quote, progress to have Lula back as president, whereas Bolsonaro was literally destroying the Amazon forest, so he was anti-landless workers movement. In the words of Joao Pedro Stadil, the national coordinator of the MST, when you set up a car factory, you expect to obtain a 13% per year profit. When you take control of a natural resource and turn it into a product, like water, for example, you have profits over 700%. That's what they are after. India's massive farmers movement in 2020 to 2021 represented an enormous mobilization of small farmers against the growing agribusiness domination of Indian agriculture and the attempts to turn the earth and food into capital. That's the country, India. In the U.S., the massive 2020 Solidarity George Floyd protests emanating largely from the working class and youth in support of a black-led movement can be seen as indication of the level of resistance to racial capitalism only waiting to burst out as material conditions, particularly in urban built environments, polarize. So for as god awful and nasty as it sometimes seems, I appreciate the silver lining positive side to this. The quote here is that bubbling under the surface is the frustration of the masses of people, more so those typically minorities, struggling to survive because of the system of domination. So, you know, what is it that tips the scale? That remains to be seen, but that does, in a sense, keep one keeping on to know that as dire as it seems, it's ripe for change. As dire as it seems, it's ripe for change. And reading another article, this is by somebody I follow, his blog, I think a former professor, Ed Curtin, C-U-R-T-I-N, excellent writer, very insightful. This is from his article, Lucid Summations, When Tomorrow is Today and MLK Day, Martin Luther King. The article begins, in what follows, I offer some conclusions I have arrived at and am skipping all the steps taken to arrive there. Everyone needs to follow their own path to the end. The digital revolution is more accurately described as the digital propaganda program, with the cell phone being the key to its enactment. It is an effort to coax people into loving their machines more than the human touch and to think of themselves as extensions of their machines. Clicking numbers, statistical analysis, the mathematical mindset, etc., have all been used to indoctrinate people into a world of artificial intelligence and robotic thinking, in which flesh and blood become abstractions and nature something to be conquered and controlled. The so-called digital revolution, with the computer technology dominating people's lives, has allowed the ruling elites to penetrate deep into the population's psyche without them knowing it. It has allowed propaganda to infiltrate every moment of every day as people click the buttons on the machines they think are their lifelines to reality. All becomes a miasma of manufactured illusions and spectacles in the service of the quote-unquote third industrial revolution. All of this is part of a, quote, spiritual, unquote, machine revolution in which the human spirit and its connections to God, nature, and our human humanity is slowly extinguished. Everything that MLK said was necessary for our salvation. So this ties in with the first part because the technology and the robotic thinking, as Curtin mentions, become abstractions. And then nature becomes something to be conquered and controlled, because the nature feeds the technology, as as the one example I mentioned recently in that preview of the book Cobalt Red and the cobalt for the gadgets. So again, this intertwining of the earth and the resources and the consciousness, and fascinating many highlights to that quote I could point out, like the machines they think are their lifelines to reality. That becomes where, you know, people, like everybody, I look at the weather online, but what about looking at the clouds and smelling the air and connecting with the, you know, all the elements, the wind, the earth, the water and the fire as the elements, and tuning in to the seasonal energies, not just that it's going to be, you know, maybe so-and-so degrees and maybe rain tomorrow, because they're not even accurate half the time. But I think the deeper thing here is as he says, the human spirit and the connections with God, nature, and our common humanity, that is getting pushed to the side by the digital, robotic, artificial, mathematical clickety-clack. So it definitely, at the least, takes a balancing act to use the gadgets and not get totally sucked into it, not get brainwashed, propagandized, but yet I can say, well, I can do that pretty good on my own. But then the bigger picture is, how do we as a society in the world, how do we wrestle with that? And as well, what he's talking about with the gadgets is, as I see it, it's on steroids. It's a continuation of what Marshall McLuhan wrote about in his book The Gutenberg Galaxy, in which I followed the sequences in my recent book, Moving Through the Empty Gate Forest, Inside Looking Out. Here's a quote from the McLuhan: the interiorization of the technology of the phonetic alphabet translates man from the magical world of the ear to the neural visual world. So there he's describing how the alphabetic languages took large swaths of humanity out of the quote-unquote magical world of more direct experience into the visual and the neutral visual world. So the letters of the alphabet and then the words became sort of where the source of information is. And so now this, you take that, the letters and the words, as having a turning point in humanity's consciousness, and now that has been put into the gadgets, and that's where the exponential, the way that, you know, you can get only so much junk mail physically, but you can get tons of junk mail, tons of email, tons of text, to the point where people can't even keep up or respond. That's the exponential that phonetic alphabet consciousness into the words has now gone into the technology that Curtin is mentioning as the robotic and the mechanical, and it has take us away from what he describes, what I like to say it as, the direct experience, the interrelationship with the quote actual world. One more bit of that quote from McLuhan: a child in any Western milieu is surrounded by an abstract, explicit visual technology of uniform time and uniform continuous space, in which cause is efficient and sequential, and things move and happen on single planes and in successive order. That is like the alphabet, A to Z. But the African child lives in the implicit magical world of the resonant oral word, a world of sound and touch, direct interconnection and significance. Societies that are still mainly oral tactile, Russia, China, India. Russians stress on results of exercising freedom rather than on the abstract right to freedom of expression. And then I would add to all that the native and indigenous peoples, because I've heard that in the Lakota language, there's no word for free. Because if you already are free, then you don't need a word to describe yourself as, you know, free or not free. So that is interesting there. The Russian stress on results of exercising freedom rather than on the abstract right to freedom. Sometimes it's like we're fighting for rights for things that we innately already are and have. So it gets tangled. But I think that the one of the highlights there for me is that the way and this the subtlety in which these languages and then the technology, how that distracts us from the actuality of the experiences. And a P.S., having mentioned BlackRock and Vanguard, then after recording, I saw an article with the actual head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, waging economic warfare on humanity. That's the subtitle of the article. Due to corporate influence over trade deals, governments and the World Trade Organization, transnational food retail and food processing companies continue to colonize markets around the world. Colonize. It was Russell Means of the Lakota who years ago tried to warn us, meaning non-natives. He said, "Welcome to the reservation." Colonization continues in different forms now. The gist of this article is that BlackRock and the investment firms are hugely investing in agriculture and farming. They're trying to take over at Bill Gates, who owns more farmland in the U.S. than anybody. And the quality of the food is going down. There's GMOs and et cetera, et cetera. You can look up details about that. But the food becomes more mass-produced, mass-manufactured. They make the big bucks. And then this is actually literally feeding the system, because the article also explains how BlackRock is invested in the healthcare and big pharma sector. So what do you think happens when the food gets taken over by agribusinesses and mega corporations? As the article says, this has been a key driving force behind the modern food system that sees around 1 billion people experiencing malnutrition in a world of food abundance. This is not by accident, but by design, inherent to a system that privileges corporate profit ahead of human need. Also, the investment in the big pharma is and healthcare is realizing that illness is big business, and by feeding people by long term of that kind of food, which in the long term is non-nutritional, that is literally feeding the healthcare system's business. So there's a vicious cycle there. This is why it's important to stay tuned with this kind of thing, to see what these, as the Yiddish language says, these schmucks are up to. Another fascinating thing about this article is that, as I have read about, but hardly anyone is mentioning in all the analysis about the war and what's going on with Europe, NATO, Russia, Ukraine, all of that stuff behind the scenes, is Ukraine has some of the richest soil. So this article makes me think that actually the war stuff is a distraction in some degree. It says $813.5 billion invested in arms manufacturing companies. So BlackRock is a win-win situation, profiting from both destruction and reconstruction, because the plan is to destroy Ukraine and rebuild it. BlackRock and these other financial venture capitalists, if that's what they're called. Here's the quote, official statement released in December 2022, that BlackRock would focus in the near term on coordinating the efforts of all potential investors and participants in the reconstruction of our country, channeling investment into the most relevant and impactful sectors of the Ukrainian economy. So that the agricultural land, in Ukraine, again, some of the richest soil in that area, huge amount of crops. Western agribusinesses have been coveting Ukraine's agricultural sector for quite some time. That country contains 1/3 of all arable land in Europe. 2015 article by Oriental Review noted that since the mid-90s, Ukrainian Americans at the helm of the U.S.-Ukraine Business Council have been instrumental in encouraging the foreign control of Ukrainian agriculture. In November 2013, the Ukrainian Agrarian Confederation drafted a legal amendment that would benefit global agribusiness producers by allowing the widespread use of genetically modified seeds. The IMF, they invested $5 billion loan program, World Bank, yada yada, you can read the article, but that's how much is going into trying to create agribusiness farmland in Ukraine. So how much of that was behind the war? Don't know. And also there has been mention of who is one of the only people, one of the only leaders to encourage non-GMO foods, agriculture. Can you guess? A bonus point. If you guess, contact me and I will give you a free book. Vladimir Putin of Russia. That's something that I don't know where it's at right now, but he has proposed or put forth or is working on or has already done something to do with maintaining non-GMO agriculture. Considering the huge land there, seems like a big thing. So again, you can see how all this ties in together. The sense of conquering, colonizing nature, distracting people's consciousness, the war machine, and the farmland. It always comes back to the land, because that's where we live, with the land. So thank you for listening, and be well.